Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon. We are on live. This is May Pang talking to you from New York. And you know, this is getting weird. Our little Blog Talk Radio studio thing is getting weird. I don't know how it is. I mean, what are we going to do here? Come on, Cynthia. How is it down there?
I don't know. I said last week, I said some little cyber aliens stole our music at the top of the hour, and now I can finally see you on my studio board, but I guess you can't see me.
I can see you, but I can't see somebody else on the board. And
our
that's
guest.
Just like,
yeah.
And yet,
well,
you know what?
I see her.
But do you skip this thing up at the top? I mean, this is, hey, guys, you got to get your act together out there. It says waiting for host. That's what it says.
Yeah,
on my face.
Well, they say they've got a little problem and they're working on it. Hopefully, we're going to stay on the air. We're going to cross all our fingers, but it looks good so far. And before we go to our guest, because we're excited about having her, we need to mention that we lost somebody in our music family. And you take it away, May, because you knew him better than me.
Yes, somebody I've known for over 40 years, Dennis Ferrante. He was an engineer. Yes, he worked with John. For most people, I mean, you know, in fact, we lost two engineers. John's main engineer was Roy Sakala, and Dennis, when he started out, was an assistant engineer, and he graduated to be an engineer and producer later on, and he was also, which was great because he helped John out on when Roy couldn't be around or somebody else couldn't be around, and he made everybody laugh, and that was the thing. So, he passed away after years of having a heart problem, and you know, he was with his family. He was with his daughter and grandchild when he passed away, in a sense, unexpectedly at the same time. You know what? He's not in pain, and he's probably giving everybody grief up there, too, making everybody laugh.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I like to call Dennis devilishly jolly. Like, he was just a little cutie face. He wanted to pinch his little cheeks, but behind that little cheeks, he's got a bit of the devil. And he was a really kind, funny man, and so loved by everyone all over Facebook's tributes to him. And
yes, I mean, he definitely was.
Dennis.
You needed something,
yep.
He was going to be there. He did a lot of carpentry work for me as well. He says, what do you need? I see that you need this. He come over and he started doing it. You know, forget about the music. He got the carpentry down too, and he helped so many people that that we were all talking about it. You know, the carpentry and working that. That's a
he
value.
Will be
That's
missed. Yeah, he was loved. He will be missed, and it's sad. But I'm kind of glad that he was with his family and he wasn't alone. So
yes.
There you go.
I am too.
All
yes.
right, let's change gears because it's a gorgeous day here in Nashville. I don't know how it is up there, but
No, we just had a rainstorm. I don't want to hear it.
Oh yeah, no, it's beautiful here. But anyway, listen, over this past couple of years, I've been watching this young woman on Facebook who decided she wanted to make a movie. Now, she had gone and she'd studied for it from what I've read, but she wanted to make a feature film. And she made it happen, okay? It's been released by Wild Eye Releasing, and she and her partner, Matt Staley, have formed a film company together called Coming Together Productions and Libmatic Films. Libby is at work on her second production. I don't know if it's a sequel, but we're going to ask her. And
right.
Without further delay, we'd like to welcome another chick to add to our great broad series, director, producer, actress, Libby McDermott. Libby, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you, Cynthia and May, for having me. Thanks so much. And thanks to all the listeners. Hi.
Well,
can
Libby,
I say hi to my mom real quick?
You may. Go ahead. Say hi to mom.
Because I know she's listening. Hi, mom. Hopefully dad, too. You made him sit down. But, yeah, we got distribution, which is huge for, like, a first-time filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
It did take me 3 years to make this movie, and I actually thought I could do it in 2 weeks, at least shoot it in 2 weeks. But it ended up taking me a year and a half to shoot it. But you got to work your, you know, your day job too.
Yes,
and then everybody else had, you know, jobs and lives. And this was everybody's dream. Nobody got paid. We were lucky enough to just get surrounded by, you know, people with the same dream. And they, you know, after a while, you know that they probably kind of lost hope that this project would ever get done. But we just kept picking away at it. And when the script was finally shot and we could say we were done with that, then we had to go into the editing. And a lot of this stuff we had to learn along the way, you know, and sound and special effects. And so we just kept learning this, you know, ordering these things to help us make this better. And so another year and a half later before we even get a rough cut. And we were able to show that to an audience of about 250. I have probably about, you know, 40 to 50 people involved in helping put this whole thing together. I actually only started out with $1,000. I would say
Wow.
we probably ended up with about three in it. And I don't, you know, I can't say for sure because every inch of the way, we kind of had to put a little in here and a little in there and, you know,
start to add up and
that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't even realize it.
Yeah. Wasn't able to keep track of all that, but I do know that one person, like, saw an Indiegogo that we put together, and all we thought we needed was $1,000 to make a small feature-length, couple-week-long shoot with everybody, but I was never able to get everybody together. But he came into a restaurant where I was waitressing. He had seen the Indiegogo, and I waited on him. At the end, he said, "Do you think you can make a movie with, you know, with what you said on Indiegogo?" And I was like, "Yeah." He wrote me a check for what
wow.
I thought I needed. That gave me so much confidence because, you know, like, maybe I can do this. And then, you know, from that step on, family members came together, you know, friends like family members came together.
Well, that you know, Libby, we have, you know, back in the day, May and I go way back, way back. I used to be a casting director, and I hired her to do acting work for me. And back then, independent films were more like what you're doing, okay? Independent films were not funded by movie studios. And I had two friends that had a little movie, and they got all their relatives to chip in money for this movie. And that movie was Sling Blade. And it went on to win an Academy Award. And
oh,
they,
my goodness.
Yeah. Of course, they weren't smart about things, and they got a lot of money. Miramax bought their film, and they got a lot of money and, you know, went belly up. But that's kind of a cautionary tale. But then I have another friend who they wanted to enter their film in Sundance, and they needed money to finish it. So they went down to Atlantic City and put all the money that they had on a roulette, black or red, and they won. And they got enough money. So I mean, a lot of it is luck. A lot of it is karma. And we really respect the fact that you stuck with it and you said, I'm going to make this movie, I'm going to release it, and it's going to get done. And you surrounded yourself with people who believed in your dream. Now, you're working on a sequel, correct?
Yeah, we can call it a sequel. I often say spinoff.
Okay.
Just because it will stand on its own. You won't have to see the first one to see the second one. But there is definitely some reoccurring characters. And also we touch on, like, the past storyline. But you don't have to see it. But I do hope that if people haven't been exposed to my first movie, they'll be like, well, what did she do first? You know, if there is something else. So, but, yeah, we're going to shoot that this summer. So in July, I might have to pick up one other day where I do want to have, like, a celebrity-named guest star, if you will. And then so that can be later. and then I have a 2-day shoot that I want to schedule in the fall, which is actually going to be my first little period piece. It's going to flash back in time.
Can I ask what this movie's about now, May?
She's doing flashbacks.
I just need to know period pieces. Yeah, I wanted to know what this movie is actually about. What is the premise of this movie?
Yeah, so it's called Dead Woman's Hollow.
Right.
It is basically a true story that happened. We adapted it for film. All of our characters are fictional because we wanted to make it into a 2-hour movie or less than 2-hour movie.
Right.
But in 1988, there were two women that were in a relationship, and they went out to hike on the Appalachian Trail on a road actually called Dead Woman's Hollow, real road, and a man had seen them, a mountain man, and he did not like what he saw. And he had so much hate and anger in him, he decided he was going to kill them. So he hunted them, and he did end up killing one of the ladies. There is a survivor, and she is she goes around and speaks about anti-hate crimes. She has a book out. We didn't follow her story completely, but it is, you know, the idea came from it, and you know, and the message in the movie is hate, and how it, we do all have an element of it in us. We recognize
it.
Absolutely.
So we touch on it in different areas as well, like the hate that's trapped in kind of each individual character. You see flashes of it. So I, you know, really hope that everybody comes away from it, like looking inside themselves a little bit.
Well, I could totally relate to the tobacco spitting dirtbag guy in the camouflage plant pants. That I don't want to give away too much of the story. That actually helped the girl that survived. They got her to the hospital or whatever. But I really have to say, Libby, that in this day and age, to take on a project and say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it from start to finish, I'm going to do it on my own, and I'm going to get it released, is a feat, especially for a woman. And that's really primarily why we wanted to talk to you, because it's still a man's world in the film business. It always will be, sadly, but women can take a foothold, and you've taken a step in that direction. So we have to applaud you for that. Excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Good job, girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I have to applaud my crew and my writer before anything, because a very small crew. You know, Matt Staley, I would definitely say he's my assistant director, he's my cinematographer, my editor, my sound mixer, my color corrector. He definitely was a do-it-all. And but John Taylor, man, well, I actually worked on two other films with him. The script, when he hands you a script, you live it when you read it, and you want to be a part of it. And that was the best thing. When I handed anybody the script before we cast or anything, they want it on. They want it on board. There was no question about it. So very well written and a talented man.
Yeah.
Where can people go to find the film? Is it going to be released in theaters, or is it a DVD? How can they get it? Tell us.
All right. It's a DVD, and it actually is released on June 23rd. We have a few days, but you can pre-order it. You can pre-order it on Amazon, Best Buy, Barnes & Noble, Target, Kmart, FYE. And there's more. So even if you just Google it, Dead Woman's Hollow, those links pop up, and you can check them all out. They're, you know, we have a Twitter. It's @ Dead Woman Hollow. There's no S in there because you couldn't add any more letters.
You can't add that anyway if you wanted to.
So it's Dead Woman Hollow. And then our Facebook is actually Dead Woman's Hollow. So definitely give us a like, follow us. We'll be posting more definitely about the new production that's going to be in play
Well, that's.
Yeah.
Will you come back when you finish your next one? Will you stay in touch with us? Will you let us know?
Absolutely.
Let us know about the progress of this one, and stay in touch with us, and come back on and talk about the second one, and let's see how different the filmmaking experience was the second time around for you.
Right.
I think that
exactly.
would be really
Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
From a novice to more of a seasoned person doing this now.
Yeah. Hey, she's doing flashbacks and period pieces now, May.
Yeah. This is great.
And I hope that any person with this dream will know that you can, I mean, you can even make a movie with your iPhone, you know?
Absolutely, and that's what they were talking about when the iPhone came out, that you can make a movie with it. So.
Yeah.
And they got the editing and everything. Yeah.
We wish you the best of luck. Continue on. You're helping to blaze a trail for the women that are coming up behind you, and the fact that you're willing to be open and talk about your experience and share information is what all ladies need right now. We got to band together.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Best of luck. And keep
us
posted,
Libby. We
will
definitely keep in touch.
Awesome.
Right, thank you.
Take care. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
That was that's amazing, you know, that you know, that she's got this finally. I mean, what are we talking about? $1,000. I mean, you can't walk out the door these days about anything, but I mean, like you said, it probably cost about $3,000. Yeah, you know, you put, by the time you do the little bits here and there, it just starts to add up. And so, three
is
still amazing.
You know, when you're editing yourself, you got to have all the software. You got to buy that. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
I think it's really amazing that she said, well, I thought I could do it for $1,000 and then realized, you know, after I got into it, no, that wasn't going to happen. But still, she forged forward.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The message that we want to put out there. You know, it's there's been a lot of talk, a lot of flack about the fact that women are not represented in the movie business, and I'm pretty sure in the music business too, in the right way. We don't make the same amount of money. We don't have the same opportunities. They don't look for a woman automatically to direct, or even director of photography.
Yes.
Is usually a man, okay? And, you know, I'm not saying that you should automatically have the job because you're a female. Boys, don't get your panties all in a bunch, okay? I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is give us a chance because, see, we're willing to work with you. You know, it's got to be a two-way street. I'm all kumbaya right now because I'm just happy to hear a girl making it happen. Kumbaya.
Yeah. Kumbaya. You're funny.
Speaking of movies, did you see the Brian Wilson thing? The Love and Mercy?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's all I can tell you. I went in there knowing that it was a Brian Wilson, and I was really anxious to see it because, first off, I know Brian. And second of all, it was just, I just wanted to, because, you know, he had a very rough upbringing because of his father. Because he was the oldest, and he was deaf. He's almost deaf in one ear because the fact is the father used to beat him up and hit him on the side of the ear. Like, he's deaf almost in one ear. But he kept hearing. It also dealt with, a mental illness that goes undiagnosed. And or it could give you the wrong diagnosis, you know, and that's what it was all about also. And because we've all heard about him being in the sandbox and laying forever. And it was an interesting concept of how they made the movie. They have him in his 20s. Paul Dano, the actor, did him in the 20s and was amazing. He did such a great job with that. And they got, when he was in the studio, they got people that represented, they didn't look like them. They represented in the sense of the period clothing and certain things and, you know, all the different musicians. And he called them the Wrecking Crew. If you're a musician, you know that the Wrecking Crew was the elite group that used to do all the music back in the 60s and maybe some touch in the 50s back in the day. You know, that was the key group that made all the music from back then. And then you get... And then you bring it up to the sort of the semi-present, and that is the real the real savior for Brian was his wife Melinda, his second wife, and it brought out the relationship of Eugene Landy and which everybody heard about, which was his therapist, psychiatrist, whatever, with Brian Wilson, and John Cusack actually portrayed him in his older age. Mm-hmm. So it was quite, and I'll tell you what was very interesting. I sat there and I was watching it, and I said, oh, I forgot about Eugene Landy. And I was reading up on it. They said the first 2 years, he definitely got Brian out of that funky stage where he was like, in a sense, a beached whale. You know, he never left the house, just laid there. And he got him back trim and fit. But somewhere in the second year, you know, when the familiarity comes in, you know, all of a sudden he became his co-writer, his manager, all of a sudden he became something else. And mm-hmm. that was a bit on the danger side. No longer was he the therapist, but he was somebody else. And he had all these people guarding Brian. And it was funny because in the opening scene, he says, oh, I want to take you out. Well, let's go out on a date. He goes out and Melinda gets into the car and she sits there with everybody, the therapist, the helpers, the whole thing. And at one point, you know, it shows how the therapist or Eugene Landy is screaming at him, Brian, you need to listen to what I'm saying. And he screamed. And that brought me back. It threw me back because I actually witnessed an episode of that.
You're kidding.
I did not God. I started to freak out. John, you know, used to say you should have been there. I was there, and I was there on all levels, you know. And it's like it's freaky how I end up in some of these scenarios. But I was at a show, and Eugene Landy said, "May, get in this car." And I had somebody with me. It was a date, and we got thrown into the car. I didn't know where we were going because there's a party or whatever. And we got thrown in. And I end up in the car, and I sit down, and I realize I'm sitting next to Brian, who is now covering up his face but peering through his fingers at people.
Oh,
because,
gee.
Yeah, and I'm like, I said, hi, Brian. I didn't know what else to say. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at my date at the time, and he's looking at me. We're both like, oh, geez, how did we get in here? And then Eugene Landy is at the door, holding the door, and then he looks at Brian, and he goes, Brian, and he's screaming at him. That was not a good show. We'll discuss this later. I mean, but he did it in such a way. And I was like sitting there going, how did I get in here? Why am I in here? And I've actually witnessed, outside of Melinda, you know, who saw it all the time. God bless her that she saved him. But, you know, I actually did see this. So this is not an exaggeration to what was going on.
Well, it's kind of like the Emperor's New Clothes. No one wanted to say to him, Brian, this dude is
Bengali. But they couldn't reach him. And Melinda was the only one at the end of the day that could reach because he wanted to date her. So it was under a controlled environment. And it turns out, and it explains at the end of the day, she had help with the one woman in the circle because Eugene Landy held it over that she was, he would report it to immigration and she didn't want to leave, you know, that type of thing. And she felt bad. So the two of them really figured out how to do it. And she called up, you know, the rest of the Wilson, the brothers and all sorts of things and to try and get him out of it. And they did. And they explained it at the end of the day. The woman that helped, that was in part of the organization, she ended up helping, and I think her name was Maria, maybe I'm wrong, but she ended up, or Gloria, and she's still friends with them to this day. And they found out that it wasn't a full-blown schizophrenic, whatever else, but it was another form, but it was different. It's not, so all this medication was wrong diagnosis. So that's why Brian is here. And, you know, it's a very moving film. It really is, and I, wow! It just sets, and I strongly want people to see it. I just happened to go visit the Academy of Arts and Sciences, and my friend Donna Dickman said, come with me, and it was great. I got a chance to meet the director, the writer, the screenwriter. Could you imagine? The screenwriter. Oren Moverman and Bill Pollard was the director. Oh. And John
Cusack
and Brian.
It's really a biography. I mean, it's not a docudrama.
Yeah.
It's the real story.
It's the real story. And Brian was there, and he said it was very accurate. He said when he saw himself, he goes, there were times when he saw himself, he goes, wow. Oh, yeah, you know. Because, you know, he'd forgotten a few things, and he goes, right. And somebody asked him, does he still hear voices? And he said, no, not as like what he did before. You know, there are things out there. And it is a part of an issue of like a mental illness that we have to look at and not just think that they're crazy. They're not. You know?
You know, I have a brother that's a diagnosed schizophrenic, and he... And you know he used to say he could hear
several types of it
through the he says he hears voices through the TV and through radios and stuff. And I said to my mother one day, what if he hears on a different frequency than everybody else? I mean, what if it's true? What if he does hear people
talking?
Well,
that's the whole thing,
you know?
Is that and you can't put the schizophrenia in just one lump sum either. There's varying degrees and different types. And so it's not all the same, and you just can't say, oh, that's what it is. So, you know, it's a whole lot of things, and we have to do more about, Robin Williams was on. There's all these different things that go on in one's life, and especially now it's heightened by so many different things around us. So, you know, people are not crazy. We just need to try and help and find and get help with them, you know, to so they can live a somewhat normal life.
Well, and there's no shame in mental illness, and I don't think there's any of us that aren't touched in some way. I mean, I know, my family portrait could be next to dysfunction in the dictionary, you know, but it doesn't mean that that's not the normal, you know, so...
You know, so people have to have an open mind. This is not, and Brian was not, he's brilliant, but he had these other things, these other health issues, mental health issues that, and it was wrong, you know, the diagnosis is wrong. That's what you read at the end. And he finally got corrected, and, you know, look, he's functioning, he's out there. And, you know, and of all the things, he outlived his two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carl and Dennis.
Which is really bizarre when you think about it, because he was the one that they always thought was going to be the one to go, you know.
Yeah.
But, I happen to see it. Did you watch the Tonys at all last night?
No, I was out at a special last night. It was called Acoustic Lennon Tribute Show, and a friend of mine, Bob Wolper, invited me because he's on the board, and I went to see it, and it was lovely how all these different people were singing their version of acoustically John song, but not done traditionally. It was very interesting.
Really,
really,
I know I've asked
you
this before, but what was you have a favorite John song?
Well, Number 9 Dream, because I sing on it, and it's my voice, and then I also have Surprise, Surprise, Sweet Bird of Paradise, which he wrote for me.
Yep.
So, and I know, I think there are other songs that I've inspired him for, but, you know, those two I definitely can tell you. You know, so that's why.
Maybe that's
so
what I
that's
need.
About what's going on.
I need a man to write a song for me. I'm putting that out there, boys. Putting it out there. Well, listen, Chiclet, we're winding down.
Yes.
Next week, we have Barry Melton on the show.
Excited
about that. Yeah. That's going to be an awesome
show. We're going back into our hippie stages, I swear to God.
We are. We like to do that because that's our favorite time period. You know, of course, we were just infants then, but there you go.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, a shout-out to Libby McDermott. Check out her film, Dead Woman's Hollow. You can go to Amazon, all the usual suspects. It's coming out June 23rd. Wish her the best of luck. And listen, Chiclet, I'll talk to you after the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, everybody have a good week, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Awesome. That was Ms. May Pang, and I'm Cynthia Nielsen, and you've been listening to Dinner Specials on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.